I might pronounce this wrong, but Coghlan K&W.
Afternoon, gents.
Afternoon.
Did a dry run yesterday and I've got in under 5 minutes, so I won't hold you up too long. My name's Calvin Coghlan. Along with my wife Wendy, we farm sheep, beef and dairy grazing on 700 acres at Mossman. I've lived there my whole life, having taken over the farm from my parents, and we've raised 4 children of our own. We have a 21-year-old son who's in the construction industry, and lack of confidence in the future of farming means I am not actively encouraging him toward agriculture. I'll get right to the point. I want to address, I'm not going to go into specificities of physiographic zones and stuff like that. I just want to talk to you philosophically a wee bit about the demise of sheep farming. What I see is the demise of sheep farming. I want to address the elephant in the room and talk about long-term sustainability in farming, because I think fundamentally that's what this is all about. As a sheep and beef farmer for 30 years, I've seen our profitability slowly but surely eroding. The failure of meat and wool companies to be able to sell what I believe are great products comes down to a complete lack of leadership, but that's another story. We have been lucky as an industry that the mass expansion in dairy has driven up land values and increased our equity. Otherwise, many more family sheep and beef farms would have been converted to dairy or squeezed out by banks long ago. On our farm in the last 10 years, we have substantially lowered our stock numbers and we run the place very close to organically, with only limited use of chemical, low food application, no drenching of adult stock, no antibiotics or inoculation of stock. Thus, I believe we are sustainable environmentally. We've resisted the urge to convert to dairy, even though our property is suitable. It would have made sense from a financial point of view to do this, and we're lucky to have off-farm income. However, if it is decided by ES to restrict the change in land use, we would see an undermining of value of non-converted land. Thus, we would be the ones to pay, while converted land would conversely increase in value. This, of course, would make sheep farming even less viable. Apart from this, I would also see it as a fundamental erosion of our property ownership rights. We have also done maid-to-maid heifer grazing off and on over the last 10 years. This has helped keep us viable, and the fact that many of my mates are dairy farmers has given me a good insight into the dairy industry also. Of course, over time in our wee town, we have seen enormous change. What I see going on in my community is the large-scale corporatisation of farming. Along with that, we've had many Sri Lankan and Filipino imports. These are wonderful, hard-working people, and my wife, who teaches many of their children, loves them, as they are appreciative of a quality education, and the upside of it is we now have a great cricket team. But I ask myself, why can we not get Kiwis to do this work? I know from a mate of mine who recently converted in Canterbury that after many years of farming, he was still absolutely shocked at the sheer amount of nitrogen he was told he needed to apply. Along with this, we have the importation of PKE and supplementary feed, and then there's the massive cost of irrigation on many of these farms. All this, to me, points to an industry that is unsustainable on many levels. Having said that, I do think that with increased use of wintering sheds and limits on stocking rates and food application, dairy can be sustainable and indeed has a far brighter future, certainly, than sheep and beef industry. So I agree that we need to protect what is essentially corporate greed on a massive scale. How do we do this? I realise it's very complicated. But I would urge ES to resist applying greater restrictions and workload on those that are already farming sustainably and thus further erode their viability, but rather target those that are increasing stocking rates, pouring on endless amounts of urea in an effort to keep banks and shareholders happy. It is proposed that we will need consent to farm, and we'll need to put forward a yearly plan. This in a time when we as farmers are being hammered by bureaucracy in the form of things like health and safety and NAT, and I don't want to get started on NAT, but it's one of my pet hates. This will result in more time wasted sitting in an office. In an era of user pays, will ES be compensating me for my time and information? I think not. I'm a farmer, not an office worker. Please allow me to prove that I'm farming sustainably and then leave me alone. With the proviso that if in the future I wish to increase my stock rate or start pouring on urea, I will need to apply for consent to do so. We live in an age of multimedia where perception is reality and politicians pander to Auckland, a time where a few people that run organisations like Fish and Game can use compulsory levies to fund legal battles that stymie community good projects for the benefit of a few privileged rich fishermen. A time when sheep farming is dying and along with the family farm. I stated earlier that I'm not encouraging my son to go farming, which is of course very sad. This proposed plan has the ability to help with the urban perception of farming in Southland, but it also has the potential to be the final nail in the coffin of the Southland family sheep and beef farm, and that would be sadder still. In closing, I'd just like to say that my wife and I are both Southlanders born and bred. We've lived here all our lives. I played rugby for Southland, like my father before me, and you know, I've been a hunter and a diver most of my life, and I love what Southland provides me as far as that goes. The thing that makes me most proud to be a Southlander is the fact that so few people create so much for our national GDP, and this is, you know, when we're dealing with everything that Mother Nature can chuck at us, as Southlanders we know can get pretty rough. Most lambings we generally get whopped with a sou'wester that flattens a lot of animals and can be very demoralising. But, you know, it's just, when you have something like this hanging over your head, after you get through a lambing like that, you know, sometimes you're clinically depressed and you just want to chuck it in. But your family get you back up and you carry on and face another year. And, you know, I don't want to be a whinging farmer, sound like come across like a whinging farmer, because, you know, most of the year my job is a good job, and you get days like this, and it's a beautiful place to farm. But, you know, in the end of the day, it's a great way to bring up kids, which is my most important job. I've got my two oldest are in Wellington. One's a secondary teacher like a mother. The other one's a OT for the DHB. And I've got a son-in-law who is works for MPI. And I have them on, they're all on the gravy train. But of course, I'm very proud of them because they've got their security. And when it comes to my other son that I mentioned here, who's 21 and he's done a degree, a diploma in construction, and in a few years down the track, you know, I'd love to be able to have more confidence in the future of farming and be able to say to him, Jake, come home, and you can do what I did with my old man and learn all the wee things about farming. And but as things stand, with when you've got plans like this hanging over your head, and you've got the ability of bureaucrats with a stroke of a pen to wipe out your equity and to undermine your ownership, your property ownership rights, it's very hard to have confidence and to be able to say to him, come on home and be a farmer. You know, you're better off on the gravy train like your siblings. So, yeah, that's all I really wanted to say to you guys today, and thanks for the opportunity.
Welcome. We'll see if we have questions for you, Lloyd.
Well, thanks for your comments. That's well spoken. I just want to... you made reference to targeting poor performers, which would suggest you're going to have to somehow sort the poor performers
you mean polluters?
I'm saying poor performers environmentally.
Yeah.
How would you go through that process?
Oh, look, it's...
And I say that because and you referred to it in your comments, all the dairy farmers run under consent now. So effectively they are consented, and there's another number of consents that sit around a lot of the point source discharges. But your comments referred to a number of farmers who maybe are not taking the same approach as you are or don't have the same passion that you have. But we still need to work out how we actually fit this plan into today's environment. Do you have any suggestions on how we can...
Look, I wouldn't want to go into that, Lloyd, because I'm not an expert in that sort of thing. I mean, did you guys see the recent 60 Minutes program? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
With the, you know, the two examples on the opposite ends of the, you know, and this somewhere in the middle there, isn't it?
I think the key I'm getting to is you have to take a community with you no matter where you are, and you have to sort through how you're actually going to make this work. So you're encouraging good performance to be distributed around everybody and socialise it, and you're actually encouraging those that are reluctant to move but saying there are better ways of doing the same thing, and to pick up your point, may have some positive economic value to your farm.
Yeah.
So I just want to pick up that point that you raised, that I'm trying to just try and flesh it out a little bit.
Yeah. I'm not skilled in those areas of. It's going to be complicated. I know it's going to be complicated and it's going to be hard, but I really hope, you know, that you target the right, you know, when it comes to improving our runoffs and our river quality, you've got to target the right people.
Thank you, Mr.
That was a great speech. I'd encourage you to give it in other forums as well as here. But can I just make a comment, then I'll ask a question? You know, for the last 25 years, every single day there's been 4,012 less sheep in New Zealand. Now, it wasn't environmental pressures 25 years ago that started that. So, I guess my question is, you know, where do you see the connect between this and the demise of sheep and beef farming?
Well, the demise of sheep farming has been driven by lack of profitability, which is, you know, coming from lack of lead. We can't sell the product, you know, the way that Fonterra is able to sell their products. I know they're different products and they're harder to manage and the complications, blah, blah, blah. But fundamentally, we're not profitable. And it's money is what's driving the demise of the sheep industry. It's, in Mossburn, it's just people have sold out because they're not making money. Mm. That's market signals at the end of the day, I suppose. Mm. I don't know how you change it. I think the best way to protect our environment would be to make sheep farming viable again. And, you know, look, my old man said to me the other day, tell them, you know, when there was sheep on the Southland Plain, we could swim on all the rivers. And I know that's a pretty,
I think what you're saying then, if I could paraphrase it, is there isn't really enough financial juice in the system.
No, there's not. And I'm not saying we need to go back to the
environmental stuff that you believe we should be doing.
Yeah, I think it's comes down to
that's where you're getting
leadership vacuum is the problem. Yeah.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Coghlan. I haven't got a question, but can we have your notes that you spoke from today?
Yes, yes. Yep. Do you want to leave me? Yep.
Yeah, that'd be great. And I don't have any further questions. Thanks very much for coming in and speaking to us.
Thanks for your time.
You're welcome.